Hey guys, what's up? Welcome back to another episode of the NRL Hunter podcast brought to you by Six Hour. I am here. I know I say this every week. I always say I'm here with my good friend, but I literally am here with one of my very good friends, Terry Diston. You guys may have heard me talk about him in the past. We'll touch base about that more. Terry's like, you talked about me on the show already? Yes, I have talked about you, Terry. But we have Terry Diston on the show today. And so real quick, Terry, you want to give the listeners a quick rundown of who you are and what you do?
Well, I'm glad I'm tuning in to finally hear all the good or bad things you're saying about me. I am Terry Diston. I'm out here in Utah. I'm a match director in the NRL 22 side. Recently shot my first NRL Hunter match. And other than that, I am just a hunter rancher guy out here in Utah.
So, Terry, yes, everything that Terry just said is true. It's a little bit modest. Terry's a phenomenal shot. He does some consulting for one of those companies out there. It's a very big name that we'll talk about here in a few minutes. But Terry, if you guys, you know, I've talked about him in the past. Terry is actually one of the people with Paul Dallin, a great mutual friend of both of ours. Terry is the gentleman who took me to actually harvest my first ever big game. I was able to shoot a elk on his property. So Terry has a special place in my heart and will always be remembered because he took my elk virginity.
I took that elk card from you.
You took that elk card from me for sure. So Terry, before we get into like the business side of things, you grew up in hunting. How long have you been hunting? What is your hunting background?
So I grew up probably like most of your listeners, grew up since I was very young. 22s really, really kind of took that for me. That's why I've got a special place in my heart for 22. So I grew up very young on a ranch here in northern Utah, shooting, you know, all sorts of varmints we had here that was really ruining our fields. So from muskrats to squirrels. So grew up really hunting all the small game to start out with. Absolutely loved it. And then as we got going on, the big game really took over. Mule deer is by far still my favorite animal. I enjoy elk. But then as that took us down the road, we just didn't shoot that much. You know, as you get into the hunting world and you go down that rabbit hole, you shot one or two times a year. And so really, as we worked into it, I joined and started the World Coyote Calling Competition. We did that for several years. Les Johnson, man, he liked to beat up on us pretty good when he got started in that before Predator Request. So that really got me in the competition side of any sort of rifle. And then as I moved to Wyoming for 17 years in the oil field, it exposed me to the same type of animals, but different type of hunting from coyotes and world coyote calling. Just a cooler side. So I'm still down that rabbit hole of those 200-inch mule deer and big elk, but really just started out with a 22. And I think I'm more back in love with the 22 now than I ever have been.
Nice. I didn't know you were doing coyote contests and all that before.
I did. We run the Summit County Coyote Calling Competition a couple years. We competed in nationals out there in Rollins a few times. And then we did the little series, you know, just a little outlaw series. Guys that have put them on out there in Wyoming and stuff, and probably one of my most favorite things, because unlike big game on the coyote side, whatever came in, you know, you were willing to shoot at. You didn't judge it, you didn't measure it, and man, it was so much fun. You go out there, run and gun. We set up stands for 5 minutes. If we didn't see a cow in 5 minutes, we were on the next one. So really, with my patience, the coyote calling was awesome. When we got to hunt all over from Kings Valley, California, Nevada, Utah, and then, like I say, I did most of it in Wyoming. Wyoming is still probably by far my favorite place to hunt coyotes.
That's awesome. So when we were hunting back a couple of years ago, and you saw that one coyote, I mean, you squirreled quick. You're like, forget the elk. Let's go after that coyote. That explains why.
I was over it. There wasn't an elk in my mind. That coyote was the only thing running through my head.
That's awesome. That's very cool. So Terry recently shot the Snake River, Idaho match. That was your first NRL Hunter match. Can you kind of give the listeners a rundown of how that was for you, what you thought going into it, and then actually what it was to you when you got done with it?
So, with the given backgrounds that we have as hunters and shooters, man, I was full of anxiety. I thought I should be proficient at, finding targets, acquiring targets, and then shooting them. But as you get all the new gear that we've got, you get your new range finding binos that usually have dope or your Kestrel or whatever else. And coming from the race gun side, like your gear is stowed. So I was full of anxiety, like, hey, am I going to be build positions? Am I going to go six stages without finding a target? So with all that said, I waited, I think, that long just because I was worried about, my own skill set, saying, hey, I'm throwing it out there on the line. So with all the anxiety rolling into it, I was excited, I was nervous, I got to go up there and hang out with all the Browning guys, I'm sure we'll talk about later. And what a great experience. I can't say that I've ever had that type of experience on the backside, full of anxiety. Usually you start picking yourself apart or it apart. And Seth Howard and Brian Neese absolutely knocked out of the park. The blind stages where you really couldn't see what anybody else was doing. You had to do it all on your own. It was amazing to find the targets, the gratification that come from each stage. Even on the stages I got my butt kicked, I absolutely come off smiling. I was laughing. The RO was there. Like, I was still upset if I missed a shot. But at the same time, it was probably the most worthwhile and rewarding experience when I was done. And that doesn't always happen for me because, I don't know, you start picking things apart, and especially when you got that much wrapped up into
Right.
it. I was hoping for the, I was maybe thinking the worst, and it came out absolutely better than I ever thought it was going to be on the first match.
Nice. So overall, a very positive experience.
Very positive because it let me see how my hunting skills were for 2 days. Every hole I thought I had covered as far as, getting my dope or my gear or my tripod or getting things out of my bag, really helped me. And I love that. As I talked to Morgan King, even when we got in this, some of those stages that you absolutely fail on are great for me because they're probably the most learning. If you go out and absolutely kill a stage, you may still do things wrong, but you don't come off learning as much. And so man, it was a very positive experience and very learning for me to figure out what I want to do different, I guess.
That's phenomenal. So you've been doing shooting competitions, PRS style shooting, race gun style shooting for a long time. You've been a hunter for a long time. How would you correlate the experience that you had at the NRL Hunter into a real world hunting scenario? Did you find that it was good training, or do you think it's still, and I mean, we're friends. We need to, you're always bluntly honest with me. If you say, Travis, it's a great game, but it's just a game, cool. If you say, Travis, it's great, and I learned something for that I can actually apply to real world hunting scenarios, then great. But I kind of wanted to get your take on it because I look up to you and respect you as a competitor, but also as a hunter.
So, real world experience. Utah has a 40-year snow that we've just never had. So it brought tons of deer down. It brought all sorts of predators more in my backyard, typically every 3 or 4 days where I live. And Travis understands this, but I live out in pretty rural area in northern Utah here. And my backyard is really onto private ground. So I get coyotes 3 or 4 days no matter what. This year, as we would ride up, I was trying to help the deer out because coyotes were just working the deer over. They'd become so weak that they wouldn't even run. Real world experiences, I was going up the road as I would leave and either walk or whatever else. The coyotes were coming out faster than I could range or shoot or build a position. So real world experience, the coyotes, the 12 or 15 or whatever I got this year shot was trying to help the deer out. I learned and had that build up before I ever shot the NRL Hunter. And real world, that's what got me more excited about it than anything is because there were so many coyotes I missed because I wasn't quick enough at getting range or I wasn't quick enough at getting dope or getting my gun out or trying to transition back or forth. So real world experience, for me here, back to that coyote scene, it helped me a lot in exactly doing that. Hey, all my crap is stored. It's either on me, it's in my range or whatever else. But as I jump out, you had that 10 or 15 second window. So really getting my dope in a range, that's my real world scenario of this year, that 40 year snow and that many coyotes that are at my doorstep. And I wasn't quick enough, even coming from the race gun series. I figured I had my stuff together. I had all my stuff. Like I'm fairly quick, I think, at doing that. And I failed miserably this year in the real world winter part of that, of getting some coyotes.
Nice. So it does have applications that cross over.
Absolutely, because even like on your elk, when we got up here, and I told you, hey, when we see the elk, it's going to be that quick kind of deal. We need to get you on the ground, and you're gonna have seconds to get your scope caps open, get your range out, get your dope, and then we're going to be there. So even the team part of it, I got to watch the team part of it. I didn't partake in the team part. That is more real world to me than even some of the other stuff, because the team, that's really how we were. You're on the ground. Paul's giving you dope. I'm helping you with everything else, getting everything on the ground. The team scenario part of that, man, it was fun to watch, and it was fun to watch you guys create a competition that was far more real world to me than I ever thought it was going to be. Like I wondered how you guys were going to do it, and it was both the team and individual was definitely real world.
Yeah, it's. I'm listening to you as you speak here, and all I can hear in the back of my head is Terry saying, "Shoot it again,
I'll always give three shots. Give three shots on an elk.
That was one of the most amazing experiences I've had. Two great people. Hunting elk. It was one of those. You guys have heard the story before, but it was the last day, the last. Hey, let's just give it a try, but we'll come back out again when I can get out to Utah and try to make it happen. And there they were. So it was fast. It was awesome.
It was pretty fast paced. You must have good luck, because we got to see a cat out in the open that day, mountain lion. We got to see a coyote up there. We run onto everything the last day. It was.
Terry went out and we were in his side by side, and he went down looking at some area to see if it was a good place to glass for some elk, if there was any sign or whatever. And I'm just sitting in the side by side with Paul, and Terry comes running back, throw me a rifle, bro.
I remember the look on your face when I kept telling you, "Give me your gun, give me your gun." You're like, "Oh, you thought I'd done something wrong? What did I do?" I'm like, "No, just give me the gun. There's a cat." Yeah, great experience.
That was awesome. Okay. So, gear. What gear did you use at the Hunter match?
So I did one of the biggest things I wondered if I would use is I did have the Vortex tripod. Carbon fiber tripod, I think, is kind of a must for that. But I did the gamer plate on top. As we hunt up here, I really run a Arca Swiss off to the right side, which always carries my spotter, which I didn't use the spotter really at all. But then I threw the bag on top for, my binos. That to me was kind of one of those pivotal things. A few years ago, we all kind of started getting into the plates on top of the tripod. I seen Morgan and I come out with them about the same time. Then you seen Vibert and those guys and various different uses for them. But in this one, as simple as that plate was on top, however big or small, that was one of the first pieces of gear I noticed that I used a lot more than I thought I would. The range finding binos, Vortex has as far as the Furies. I really loved them. It was great because the dope was popping up in there. You didn't have to have two pieces of equipment. And typically before, I would run a range finder and bino. I think the combo, it's not a must, but in the time frame, the range finding applied ballistics combo of any sort, whether it be SIGs were amazing. They give you feedback probably well much quicker. The SIGs, the dope is a lot quicker to get on your card. So that was the other piece I used a ton. The bipod, the Sky bipod, that's another must. Having a good variable bipod that'll extend out that far.
Were you on this
Browning.
pod, were you using a single, double, or triple?
I would have liked to have done a double. I did not. I had a single pole. And anything past the single pole, I run back on top of the tripod. So I made that conscious choice. I didn't know how it was going to work. This is the first one. So I'm like, if anything goes over that and it looks like it, I'm going to go back to a bag and a tripod, which worked out really well for me. So I would have liked a single or a double or a triple, but I just run a single.
Nice. Yep.
The rifle, absolutely love the rifle. Browning has made a rifle that was just for this. Like, it's amazing the influence that the NRL hunters had on some of these, major manufacturers, and they made a gun that was pretty much tailored around this to for weight. They put a new recoil hog muzzle brake on there. That was important to me because the recoil on a lighter rifle, as you get out of race gun and you transition to an NRL hunter, and I love that the playing field is more leveled. Set down with a 20-pound rifle, if you're on the light side, the open light or the factory, you're at a 12-pound rifle, which equals the playing field.
Right.
So when they made that rifle, that was the other part of it. I really liked it. I shot it well. I shoot the stock, I think, better than some of the chassis. Some people don't. The chassis are amazing. There's so many manufacturers with chassis guns. Sig's gun is absolutely amazing. I've seen, I think, two or three of theirs there.
Right.
But the rifle I really liked. And then last, I think I'm still using a Burris scope on that, the RT25, which was a great scope. Some of the tree, I almost, changed some of the reticle there, but having your mil reticle was good. Having the tree was good for me calling, the second shot or a first shot I missed on all that good stuff. And then the last piece I had was my Browning backpack. That getting the stuff out, because everything's stored, having the right backpack meant a big deal. If you're another 30 seconds getting gear out. I don't think I've used a backpack that much until that competition. I used and abused and threw it out there and had all sorts of gear in there, but really the backpack, having all my stuff there, that was more important than I actually thought as far as the scheme and the setup.
Right. So I saw that Stefan showed me that Browning backpack, that new one. That thing's pretty sexy looking. That's very, I haven't had the chance to actually get out and use one. I've opened it up and played with it, but that's a nice backpack. But I want to talk about the rifle, because obviously Browning came on as a sponsor last season. They're on board again this season. We started talking to Browning last year about some of the different things that were important when using or picking a rifle. And I know when I'd mentioned that you'd done some consulting earlier in the show, you had a lot of input to Browning as to what a good competitive rifle should be and a good competitive hunting rifle should be. Tell us about the rifle. What do you know, some of the specs off the top of your head? I know you're not at your computer, but
So it's been amazing. Browning has brought me in, and absolutely amazing people, and very grateful to be, with those guys in whatever capacity there is. The rifle, when Aaron and those guys were putting it together, the recoil hog was absolutely amazing, and that's what I talk about on the muzzle brake. Like, the muzzle brake on most of your rifles, whether it be aftermarket or not, there's some amazing muzzle brakes out there. And Browning threw this one out, and they changed it just a little bit on the competition side and did some vertical ports in there. Made the recoil so much better to see that second shot. In the NRL Hunter or the Race Gun Series, recoil management is the name of the game. And some of those top players, your Morgans, your Allwines, some of those guys, when you manage recoil, it's great. And I was worried about a 12, 10-pound rifle. So when Browning got on board, they did some little tweaking on there to an already great muzzle brake, but that really made the rifle to me. Then they went down to the trigger and they put the DLX trigger on there. And I'm not a two-stage trigger guy. Some of the triggers out there have a little bit of a safety, and I get it. That's it's a good thing for hunting, for everything involved. But Browning did more of a great single-stage trigger, and that's the other part I'm pretty prone to is picking apart triggers. So the rifle, those two things made the rifle great. Then they threw some Archer Swiss rail at it. They did a dowel in the scope rail, which made it so if you, because as you bump the gun, as you're out hunting, whatever else, sometimes, hopefully not, they come loose every now and then, but they did some
Right.
things that if it happened, it wouldn't probably affect you as much. So between the stock, the Archer Swiss rail they put on there, some quick connects. For me, the rifle worked really, really well. So I'm excited that Aaron and those guys just knocked out of the park for a gun that, shot really well for me.
Yeah, no, the rifle is very beautiful. It's a good looking rifle. It is a lightweight rifle, and so, like you said, recoil management is a big deal. Now, when we're talking about recoil management, and a lot of that comes into basic rifle fundamentals of how you're shouldering, how you're getting behind the rifle, so on and so forth. And you talked a lot about the muzzle brake. Is there, as this is a debate that comes up, I guess, for quite a few people, so especially some of the newer guys out there, is there a significant difference in between using a muzzle brake, as you suggested, versus a suppressor?
Some of the bigger suppressors, and you know, there's tons of R&D, you know, your guys at Thunder Beast and some of those places have put in so much research and homework that the recoil difference on some of your smaller suppressors isn't as great. But as you get a bigger can, and there's your trade-off, is if you can make weights, you know, with a bigger suppressor, there is some recoil reduction there. But for me, the noise is a bigger factor. I finally went to a double muff, which just helped me in shooting and all that. So the noise is huge for me. Recoil reduction, if you get the right suppressor or a little bigger suppressor, is fairly close to some of your muzzle brakes. But for as much as I shoot, I just shoot the muzzle brake just because of, you know, carbon buildup, different things like that. I don't use my suppressors as much, but I really think there's a place for them because a lot of people get, as you shoot that much, as you get into this sport and you're shooting 80 rounds a day or 20 rounds a day or 40 rounds a day, a lot of people will have that a little bit of a flinch where the suppressor takes a lot of that away. If you're not going to double muff it or whatever else, you'll start anticipating that recoil and the suppressor will take that away. But largely the noise for a lot of the new shooters that don't shoot, you know, if you're shooting 20 rounds a year, then all of a sudden you shoot 40 rounds a day and 80 rounds a day. There's a big difference on how you control the rifle and how you pull the trigger.
Very true. Very true. Okay, so, excuse me. We went through some of the gear. Now, what about performance at the match? Did you perform the way that you think you would, or would you change some of the things that you did?
There was quite a few things I would change. There was a rock cavern, and it was kind of just this little, like, walking path down a steep ravine, and there's, you know, 4 or 5 foot rocks on one side and 3 or 4 foot rocks on the other side. And they've got these painted dots on the rock. And I was an absolute train wreck on that stage. So I was hesitant to use my tripod as much as I should have. But after I got to that stage and after I got through that stage and I'm laying there in the dirt, I cleaned the stage. So I feel good about that. I patted myself on the back. I'm like, you know, for the train wreck I was, I cleaned the stage. But if it was ever on video, you would have never thought I even hit a target, let alone all the targets. So I would change some things. I would be more conscious of my time. By the end of it, I really had my 4 minutes down. I run a timer. That's part of the gear I didn't mention. A timer was a must. You know, as you get in a race gun series, a minute and a half is pretty good to judge. You start to tell when you run out of time. 4 minutes, that's pretty tough to judge. You know, if you have to go back and grab a tripod or whatever else, you start rushing yourself. And I would have been more conscious of my time. And that was pretty early into day one. Right. But by the time I figured out, hey, I've got some time, I can figure it out. I was good on getting targets. If you're good at getting targets and dope, then you've got a little more time for gear. And that's one thing I would have changed is assessing my gear a little more. Because, like, again, Seth and Brian made it to where you had to use your gear or you had to have some gear. So that was great. But that was one of those things I wanted to figure out. You know, I shoot it well off a tripod. But I didn't grab it in thinking I didn't have enough time. And I did. I just didn't make that choice.
Fair enough. It's funny that you mentioned that because when we first started NRL Hunter and a lot of guys were coming from the race gun side of solo shooting, you would see guys that were like top competitors in race gun come to a Hunter match. And because they're not told exactly how to shoot a stage, what a garage sale, what a cluster of just shit flying everywhere. Where's my whatever? You know, for a couple of stages, and then finally they kind of figure out a system to be more efficient, but it's a completely different game.
You know, I am glad you actually talked about that because it is. If I'm told what to do, it's easy for me to complain about, hey, it was wobbly barricade or this or that, or I just didn't shoot well. But if somebody leaves that open for you to decide and have to decide, yeah, it's a train wreck for a while. When you come from the race gun series and like, hey, you have to be on this dot, you have to be here, Well, now it's a real world hunting scenario. I don't care where you're at, be close to this dot because this is the only place you can see the target. This is the only place you can engage the target. Well, then, yeah, it takes you a minute to get your crap together. Like, wait a minute, you're not going to tell me I can use a tripod or not, or I have to be here. Well, all right, within the realm of this dot, you have to be. But yeah, it changes your whole thought process when somebody doesn't tell you exactly what you have to do. And that's open to you.
Right. And I think the mental aspect of it is one of the greatest assets that you can come away from the matches, because a lot of times, like when I first shot that elk with you and Paul, I was fortunate enough to have you guys there, seasoned hunters. You know, you've been in that scenario before to kind of help walk me through what I should do, right? Before I came up to you, to your house, to your property, Paul and I did a little bit of training at his shooting range, which got me, you know, kind of spooled up a little bit. But literally, when we saw them, you know, it was Paul giving me guidance of how to shoot that, because we were on a hillside looking down at the elk and snow and so on and so forth. And to me, I would have probably sat there a couple of minutes trying to assess what the best position would have been. But it was literally Paul saying, you and Paul saying, get your ass on the ground, get behind the rifle, get ready to go. And I mean, when I say it happened fast, I mean it happened fast to for me, right? And that might have been a normal type of scenario for, you know, seasoned hunters, but for me, that was a very get down, go, shoot, shoot, shoot. Congratulations. Like, to me, I was like, what the hell just happened? Did I really do that? But it was phenomenal, right? So I think that mental part of it's very important when you're out there hunting, especially if you're solo hunting or hunting with somebody less experienced than you.
It's amazing over the years. I've been so fortunate to be able to be where I'm at and take people on hunts, whether it be cow hunts or even up here on mule deer or different things like that. But it's amazing to see those even seasoned people that get put in even a different situation, whether it be a different state, whether it be a different type of tree, whether it be just you know, steep mountains, whatever else. It's amazing to see that when they get in that position, in that time or strain of, hey, the deer's going or the coyote's going, whatever you got going, the elk's gone. It's amazing to see what they go to first, how well trained they are to get whatever it is first, whether it be their rifle, whether it be their binos, whether they're trying to get a range on it, whether they're just trying to get a landmark, because that's the other part of it.
Right.
Nobody's there to tell you, you know, in the race gun series, hey, here's this target, here's this target, here's this target, find them, do all that. The hunting world, nobody's there to say, hey, it's by this cedar tree, it's by that quakey, it's over here by this scrub oak. So it's fun to see how people react just like that, what stuff they get out, how they build a position, and how big a train wreck they are. Because sometimes you don't get that situation all that time. If you've been hunting 12 years and you've been in, you know, 10 spots, 8 spots, that's not a lot to really train yourself on what gear you have, what gear to use, your
Right.
backpack or bags. So this, where you can do 2 days and you're doing a stage, you know, every 30 minutes or so, it lets you see exactly what you're doing. And when nobody else is up there to help you, no other squad members know everything else, they'll help you after, especially the skills part. The skills part is great because you guys let some of them watch, you know, on that skills
Right.
part, like, hey, go up there and let's see what these guys are going to do to help you build it. I'm glad you're doing it because, like I say, it's a train wreck sometimes you get up here with somebody that just panics.
Right. Yeah. And the skills division, for those of you that aren't familiar with it, the skills division in NRL Hunter is an opportunity for anybody that wants to. If you're new or seasoned, whatever, you can come out and participate in the match, usually for about half the cost. And you get coached then, you know, the entire time through. So you can ask the ROs for help. You can ask ROs for, you know, wind calls, you know, target identification. You can ask the ROs for anything to help you with that. The only thing the ROs or a coach can't do is manipulate your weapon for you, but you don't have to follow the weight class. You don't have to follow caliber restrictions. You can shoot whatever you want and come out and just kind of get some experience. And through that skills division or that skills program, you know, there's some guys that don't do very well, and then all of a sudden they get coached and they're learning a ton. And then there's some guys that come out and just want to freshen up their skills. And I think it's absolutely phenomenal, because if you come out there and you're not competitive and you're not learning something, then it's unfortunate. But if you come out there and you only hit 10 targets, but you learned 30 new things that you can implement, to me, that's a success, right? Because that knowledge is invaluable. And when you get, you have different guys, like Isaiah Curtis does it quite a bit. He's one of the top shooters in the nation. He'll shoot as an RO, and then he'll coach the new skills guys. And if I were to come and say, hey, I want to take basically a one-on-one class with Jake Vibbert or you or Pinch or whoever, you know, they're going to charge several hundred dollars a day for them to sit there and coach you. And here you're getting experience, a match, you get to hang out with people, watch other people for less than a couple hundred bucks for the most part, you know? So it's a pretty cool program.
It is. Even Michael Lilly was there and doing the same thing, you know, as he would see people struggle or whatever else.
Yeah.
There was so much knowledge at most of each of the RO stations. On the ROs, like if there was somebody up there struggling, they would point out, hey, you know, you could do this or you could do that. And throughout the hunting world, for the most part, when you enter in the competition, it's amazing to see the people that jump in to legit help you out in any situation, whether it be with your rifle or bags or gear or whatever else. There's a ton of knowledge that those ROs and everybody else around you can offer.
Absolutely. And one of the cool things that I think you guys did, I think translates in a couple of different ways, but you came out with, what was it, three or four of the Browning guys?
Three of them. And that meant worlds to me, because it's cool to see people put gear and rifles in the shooting community, but it's also cool to see them guys throw in and say, I'm going to shoot my own gear with them, something they developed and done. So I got to come out there and hang out with them, and we got to look at, you know, what they built and kind of see what worked and what didn't.
Yeah. And that's awesome that you have the companies coming out there to constantly adapt to what's actually needed by the community versus what they think is needed because they sit behind a desk and watch a video. Right. So I think the companies that actually participate in the sports or in the activity, the hunting, whatever it is, are successful. And Browning's, I mean, Browning and hunting are synonymous. I mean,
yes.
Anywhere in the world, or I should say anywhere in the country, I haven't been all over the world, anywhere in the country you go, you're going to find some old beat down Chevy or Ford with the Browning sticker on it. Right?
Oh, yeah.
It literally... You know, when we started Hunter, we had a very good grasp on the precision rifle world, but we're still getting familiar with the hunting world. And it's like, we got to try to connect with Browning, because those are real people that hunt, that understand what the market needs. And, you know, they've proven it. They came out with a new rifle or a new variation of a rifle specifically for the sport.
You know, you look at a lot of those companies that have stepped in. The Sig Cross rifle has been great. You look at Leupold's new reticle. I mean, as far as Pinch talking to him, Morgan talked to him, all that stuff, they made a reticle to where you could see some of the impacts. You know, as we got some of these reticles over time, they've developed from this big Christmas tree and full of things and busy to not busy. And it's funny, these cycles we go in, we put so much input into the scopes or different things like that. And then all of a sudden they come out here and do that. They adapt to it and say, hey, what's really working for you competitors? Well, hey, I can't see an impact here. I can't see this. Or we need a rifle that needs ArcaSwiss. ArcaSwiss is catching on. Most all your rifles now are coming equipped with ArcaSwiss. So it is cool to see all these people, Browning included, that have come out and said, you know, we want to enter in your sport, but we want to know what we need to do. And those guys throwing in and coming up there and into the shooting world. Yeah, that's way cool on all those guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one other point I was getting to with you coming out with the Browning guys is this is a great way for a group of guys to come out and spend an awesome weekend together and learn. Right. So you mentioned you hadn't shot the teams division. I would love to see you come out here and shoot the teams division with Aaron or Stefan or whatever, and get your input on that, because I think that while hunting can be an individual event, I think hunting is 10 times better personally for me when you're doing it with a group of friends, right? Like
the social aspect is huge. And just like you say, I would love to come out and shoot one of those. You know, Blake and Stefan and Aaron and I have talked about the team thing, because there's been some times I've hunted alone, but the experience, whether it be shooting sports or hunting, the social experience is half or more of it, because if you can't share that with someone about what went on, it means a lot more to me to have the stories. You know, up there on that elk, if I would have went and drove up and shot it by myself, or you have, it really wasn't the shared experience. So
right.
Share the weekend with all the other shooters, the Browning guys, that's probably half or better for me, just to enjoy that social experience.
Absolutely. So we're starting to see, so here's a good question for you, and you don't have to answer this because this will be public. But we are starting to see a lot more teams of husband and wife.
That's a real test of a marriage, and I gotta hand it to those people. You know, if you can get a husband or wife that actually enjoy the hunting or shooting, they're, man, that's a huge bonding experience. Whether, even if you're a guy to guy, I know that sounds weird to somebody else, but really, when you share a once in a lifetime experience hunting or shooting, it'll change your relationship with that person. It really does. And if you get a husband or wife, I think it's so cool that people are bringing out, you know, whether it be their daughter, whether it be their wife, and you see these families coming out, because as hunting has got so big and so involved in money and different things like that, most of the pictures you see aren't bringing out, you know, guys in their old Ford and all their family members. So when you can take a shooting sport and bring back and revive that family aspect of it, the husband and wife or whatever else, and your marriage can survive you shooting the NRL hunter, kudos to you.
Yes, it's awesome. Excuse me. It's definitely awesome to see the husband and wife and family teams out there. I mean, the buddy teams, it's fun. It's fun to watch. But when you see a family going out there as a team and making things happen and targets being impacted, it really, there's a different type of smile. There's a different type of gratification to the success of that engagement or that stage or whatever it is, right? So
passing this on to the next generation, because really most of the states are going through some sort of youth program, trying to get youth involved. And really they're struggling in the hunting program because, like I say, it's become pretty expensive to do. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So to see some way to pass that on, the smiles to go home and talk about, that's pretty cool for me. That especially where my daughter shoots, you know, 22 and things like that. That hits home to me as far as the next generation or husband and wife. That's pretty awesome.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So with that being said, you're a rancher, you're a competitor, you're a hunter, you have all of these things. We're seeing a lot more people become interested in the hunting aspect of life, so to speak, for sustainability, for cleaner meat, for education. So there's a whole new generation of people coming into hunting for their first time. What, from a seasoned hunter's aspect, from a rancher's aspect, what would you say to people that are just getting into, not necessarily NRL hunter, but getting into hunting for the first time? What would you say to them is, you know, the words of wisdom?
Words of wisdom is, you know, there's a big chase on rifles and on different things like that. But no matter what rifle you have, this whole thing, NRL hunter, the practicing before, is to get familiar with your rifle. You know, most of the time as people upgrade different things, you're trying to get equipment to take up for your flaws. And I mean that in the best possible way. I have plenty of flaws, everything else. But instead of practicing, they try to change equipment or gear. So from that aspect, getting into it, watching some of the people that I've helped over the years that I wasn't there, but, you know, if they have a wounded animal or if they have something else like that, they weren't familiar with the recoil of their rifle, or they weren't familiar with, hey, there's wind out there. Okay, which way am I going to go with the wind? And people go out and shoot on the calm days. Well, as you get into competition shooting, you want to go out on those windy days. You want to learn because you're going to shoot on those windy days. And people being familiar with your gear and your rifle, I hope, and I think this is a big part of what you're doing, is the training and that part of it, is getting familiar with whatever rifle it is you shoot. If you're not familiar with it, if you haven't practiced with it, that's when those bad hunting experiences happen, is you made a poor choice or a poor shot. You know, everybody's wanting this 1,000-yard shot or whatever else. And as you get out there and find out where your shooting capabilities are, you know, if you're hitting or missing targets, or if there was a slight breeze and you still missed, or you still hit it, maybe you'll find out that your capabilities are farther than you thought. And maybe you'll find out that you need to be closer than you thought. But all this taking in, this is a great experience just to get familiar with what it is that you have. You know, maybe you like the rifle you have, maybe you won't. Maybe you'll find out that it shoots really well, but you're not shooting it well. So take all this and just become better shooters, better hunters, because you get more experience. You can go out and you can practice hunting now pretty much all year round with these type of experiences to get familiar with it, rather than go out, you throw a paper plate up at 100 yards and shoot it and it hits it 5 times at 100 yards. But you know, how far does that take you in the real hunting world?
Right. No, absolutely. All right. So we're almost at our time, but I've got to ask you, what is hunting season on a semi-personal note here? What is hunting season looking like at your place this year? Is it going to be a good year? Is it going to be a tough year? Because I mean, this storm that we had this year and the record snow and rainfall and everything, I mean, it can do some weird shit.
The mule deer at our house, we finally went over like 80% mortality. It was rough. I seen probably one of the bigger bucks I've seen up here in a long time. I usually get to be a bridesmaid on this kind of stuff. I usually like to find the shed antlers and then just watch somebody else shoot them for some reason. That's kind of my MO. I think there's going to be a few big bucks left. I've never seen elk. I've never seen elk die here of starvation, really, of the winter kill. I've got elk all the way down at my house, which usually doesn't happen. Some bulls that just were too weak and actually kind of fell on their head, like bent their neck over and couldn't get out, and I didn't see them. So our hunting season is going to be pretty meek. There's some cool people stepping up, and I hope I don't speak out of turn here, but there's some cool people doing cool things if you eat tag soup. So I think Epic Outdoors is talking about stepping up. Browning and some of these guys want to do a drawing. So if you're willing to go out and just hunt and have your experience, but not shoot a deer and let that go on, you know, we talked to our biologist about trying to cut tags, and they didn't cut them as far as I was hoping. But you know, there's always public pushback, you know. So everybody
Right.
wants to hunt still. There are people doing some drawings, and I don't know what's going to be in the drawings, whether it be guns or safes or getaway or whatever else. But there's cool people stepping up to do drawings. If you eat your tag, go enjoy your hunt and come back. And so I think that's cool because our hunt, I've never seen this little of deer now in the springtime. So our hunt's looking pretty rough. There's some big bucks up there, but I'm glad people are stepping up in the hunting world to say, hey, if you let the smaller buck or whatever else live and you come back, throw your tag in, we'll do some drawings, we'll do some cool stuff for anybody that just didn't shoot a deer or elk and let them live. So
That's really cool. I'm not aware of that, and that kind of inspires me to want to try to figure out something that we can do from the NRL hunter side.
I would love to. I'd love to talk to you about that, but there's a lot of cool people, and like I say, it's in the baby steps. I don't know if it'll all come true or come to light, but a lot of people where the West was hit so hard in multiple states, Wyoming, Utah, all that stuff, they're really stepping up to say, hey, go enjoy some camping time with your family, your friends, do your thing. If you come back and you just let a buck live that you know, if you didn't need the meat, if you need the meat, go do your thing, throw it in your freezer, that's awesome. But if you're just going to, you know, harvest an animal and you let it live, come back, throw your tag in, and let's do a drawing for, you know, whatever. So,
No, that's phenomenal. We should definitely talk offline and brainstorm about that, because there's absolutely some things that we can do from the NRL hunter side to put together some kind of a program like that. So let's table that for now, but come back to it and try to get something launched before season.
for sure. We'd love to.
That would be awesome. So speaking of tag soup, I told you Terry took my card with that elk, but he also took my first tag soup card with the You, Terry?
There's nothing more frustrating than seeing animals 300 yards away. You just can't shoot them, and you have to sit there for half a day and watch them hang out.
They're almost there, another 50 yards, and you can shoot them, Travis. Another 50 yards. Terry, they're turning around.
You know, I like to mix the good with the bad, you know, can't all be good.
I think the killer part of that was, I think you told me a couple of weeks after that, your niece or something, they were down basically almost to your house, where it would have been like, an easy harvest for me. But
Yes, I had some relatives come up, and we walked out of the back door of our house started up, not even 100 yards from my house, and off to the left, here's 150 head of elk. And it was like, oh, you gotta be kidding me. So yeah, bad timing that time of year for you.
Yeah, but you know, that's hunting, right? Like you said, it's about the experiences. I hunt primarily for filling my freezer, and I'm very blessed. You know, my freezer is full. I think, to be honest with you, I think we're just about done with that elk I actually shot at your place 2 years
wow.
ago, or 3 years ago now, or whatever it's been. End of two years ago, it was December.
Yeah.
I mean, it's only Brittany and I, we travel, you know, 80% of the year. So,
right.
You know, so it lasted quite a while, and it's great. We actually did elk and bacon wrapped elk last night. So
how was a bacon wrapped elk?
It was absolutely delicious. Brittany, we have this Chad Mendez, UFC fighter, also a big time hunter, based out of Northern California. He came out with a spice line, and we saw him at the Hunt Expo, and so we bought some of his spices. So we used one of his spices on there called the Brit. It's for, you know, big game. She diced it up, wrapped it with bacon, and put it in the broiler. It was like kind of late, too late to start up the smoker, the whatever. And it came out perfect. And then she did this butter, garlic, and honey mix and put it over corn on the cob and
oh, wow.
green beans. And it was spectacular.
You're making my mouth water. I'm trying to bring you
some. Next time I'm up there, we'll definitely cook for you, for sure. For sure.
I'm down.
Yeah. All right, we're going to wrap this up. What's the rest of your year look like? Are you going to be able to attend any more matches? I know you're super busy. Are you hunting this year? Are you going to take a break? What's your plans?
Hunting, there's a guy that I know that drew a ram tag in central Utah. So we went on one bighorn sheep tag 6 years ago. And now we'll be going out on another bighorn tag in central Utah. So hopefully get some pictures of that later on. But I'm excited about another bighorn tag.
But yeah, man, it's been great getting you on the show. I know it's been a little while since we talked about you getting on here, but we're glad to finally have you on here. And any last words of wisdom for our listeners?
One, I appreciate you having me on the show. I'm glad to be here. I'm super excited about that. I guess word to the listeners is get out there and enjoy it, whether it be the hunting or the hunter series. Like there's some local stuff coming around, lots of fun, lots of knowledge coming around there. So go out just for a fun experience and see how you do.
Awesome. All right, guys, we're at that time. Terry, man, I really appreciate it. I look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks in Price. Everyone who tuned in and listened today, hope you enjoyed the show. Until next time, you guys keep shooting, and we'll see you all in a match. Take care.